This is the second of two recordings of Mid-Anglian characters and is part of a unique project by the FenProbe organisation.
Inevitable question that anybody asks is, when you're a small boy, you often make up your mind to be an engine driver. When did you make up your mind to take up music as a career?
Well, as a young man or as a child, I sang in the parish church choir here, and I suppose it's the inevitable story. One day the organist wanted to be away on holiday. I was having piano lessons with his wife and was asked if I'd like to play the organ, and did, and haven't looked back since.
I see. So I understand that you went on from there. In fact, you were assistant organist in a cathedral not far from here.
Yes, I was at Ely for 4 years, but also I was director of music at the King's School there.
Mm-hmm.
Very enjoyable time.
I imagine so. Much tradition, I think, attached to
that. Yes, a tremendous amount.
Which part of the music do you prefer? Well, one can see that the organ takes us on from sort of late Middle Ages right up to the present day. Have you any particular part that you prefer, particular era?
Well, I try to keep my tastes as cosmopolitan as possible. My main occupation in life, in addition to my work at Wolfson College, is as Professor at the Royal College of Music in London, where I hold a lectureship, and in part of the requirement of that job, I'm required to talk about music of all ages and of all kinds and of all types. I play the organ and the harpsichord as a professional recital interest, and my main play particularly in the area of the 18th century, particularly German and French and Italian music, where there's a considerable amount of interest for Baroque scholars.
I see. And the object of the exercise this morning when I came along here to listen to you was, I believe, to do with the Church of Cottenham itself.
That's it, yes. The village church is, like many churches nowadays, in the process of organising a restoration appeal, and a considerable amount of work has been done to the West Tower, which is something of a landmark in the Fens. And this has now been restored to its full splendour, but at the cost of some £25,000, I think it was. And it seemed a very nice idea to produce a recording of the parish church organ and also one of my own harpsichords as well, which could then be sold as a fundraising gesture for their restoration appeal, which is now well underway.
I think it's a good note on which to end. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Gifford, and I hope your appeal will be most successful.
Thank you.
In 1981, Fenprobe recorded the memories of one of the grand old ladies of Soham, Blanche Looker. Her life from 1899 to 1981 has been condensed to just 5.5 hours. Here is a part of one of the recordings.
I didn't know what school was because I hadn't got a, I had got a stepsister, but then I didn't know much about her then, and she was glad to get rid of me, and I didn't blame her. Grizzly little creature, I'm sure. And I just had to come. I was 4. I had a lot over a mile to walk. Hobnail boots. Oh, don't wonder I've got bad feet now. Got to this school, and my stepsister, she just handed me over, and there was this governess, Mrs. Ransom. She lived with her husband there. Buck teeth, huge woman. Now, I was only a tiny child, I was down there. My sister just took herself off. I was crying bitterly. I didn't know what had happened. They'd just taken me away from mother, and nobody had said anything, and I didn't know what was happening. And this creature got hold of me, held me out. She said, "What's all this about?" I hear it every time I go past. I hung on the end of her arm like a rabbit, like, just like that. "Well, soon put a stop to this," she says. And that was my introduction to school. And it came dinner time. I didn't know what was going to happen, no school dinners. But my stepsister, she was at school here, you see. So she picked me up on the way and dragged me home. Marlowe again, grabbed a dinner, back we came again. So I used to walk over 4 miles a day when I was 4 years old. Well, I liked school, but I learned very quickly. I was precocious, I think, when I look back on it now. And all I heard was, "We can't do anything with her." And nobody told me why. And if they hit me, mother used to say, "Well, you deserved it," or they wouldn't do it. You see, you were there to be taught. And I wanted to learn and understand. They didn't explain anything to you. And then they shunted me out of this class, past that one, I went to the next. And that's how it went on. And then I was supposed to go in this other lady's class. I was dying to go into her class, Miss Bradley. She was so lovely. Hauled me in front of the governess's desk again. Discussed me over my head. "Oh, we can't do anything with her. She'll have to go in Miss Ball's class." And I never did know why they couldn't do anything with me, but I used to soak up knowledge like a sponge. There wasn't enough for me to learn. But I didn't know that. I thought I was being a bad girl. My mother had to work 6 weeks a year to buy us all our shoes for the year.
And where would your mother work?
She walked nearly to Ely, Stuntney. You know, she'd go down Stuntney Hill. On the left, that flat bit of land all along there, that was all onions. Cross and Black Horse. The little cocktail ones, the little pearlies, you see. And you had to not get your name down, they raced. They walked or went in a donkey cart. We had a lot of donkeys here, only they called them dickies. And if you could afford that out of your money, you could go for 1 and 6 a week. You could have a ride in a dicky cart. Well, not many people paid for that. They walked. My mother walked. And I had to stay away from school, as the school hadn't broken up, and run the house, look after the children. And the campaign, they called it a campaign, like they do with the sugar beet, lasted 6 weeks. And there they sat, and they had to start work at 8 in the morning. They'd been up, got their husbands off to work, got the children off to school, probably carted the water, they called it carting the water, to do all their week's washing when they got home at night, ready to light the copper. And then they'd walk all that way to Stuntney and sit there peeling these little cocktail onions. And the top money they could ever earn was 12 shillings. And that was for heaven knows how many hours.
So 1 and 6 months would have certainly eaten into that 12 shillings. That 1 and 6 months would have certainly eaten into their...
Yes, and there was a little tale attached to that. I don't know if this will sound silly to you, but it's all part of my life. We had 3 girls, you see, and then my stepsister. And she loved my eldest brother, who was much younger than me. Mm. He was a foreman on the Anglian Water Authority until he died about 2 years ago, love his heart. And anyhow, when he was born, he was a lovable boy. But I remember him being born as plain as yesterday. Midwife coming down, I was sitting up with Father and fire going, I don't know why, and she came down the stairs, she said, you've got a lovely boy, David. My father's name was David. And Father, as rough as he, well, it wasn't rough. It was circumstances. He said, thank God for that. And his name is Herbert. Mother was working, and the girls, it didn't matter about the girls, we didn't count. But this boy, Herbert, and everybody loved him, and they loved him until he died at Ely. Everybody loved Herbert. And we weren't jealous of him, we girls, we all loved him. And we didn't have shoes, nobody had shoes until they were two. And we didn't wear shoes during the school holidays, but wore them out. So, but Herbert, being a boy, he'd got to have some shoes. And we weren't jealous. So Mother went up the co-op then, was where Piers the chemist is. And she chose these shoes. They were brown kid. And they were kid. And they had some little butterflies on. And of course it was only tinsel, but as far as we were concerned, it was gold. And they were gold. And they were 2 and 6. And she paid a deposit of 6. And then she paid 6 a week until she paid for them. And she went 2 miles further round to come round to the town every week to pay that 6. When I think of it, she used to take a shortcut the other days. Even so, she walked 7 miles each way, but she used to come round and pay that 6. And the great day came. She finished paying the 2 and 6 for these brown shoes. And we all gathered together. Father was at work. And Herbert was going to have these shoes. And all sewn. I told everybody at school, my brother was having some brown kid shoes, but they got golden butterflies. So there was news all through the school that Blanche Goose's brother had got shoes with golden butterflies. And he never had a pair of shoes on his feet. And we propped him up in the corner. And we gathered all round, all the whole lot of us. My stepsister was at home then. And he was laughing. He was always laughing. He was fat. And he took his first step. Well, the picture of my mother and all those miles she'd walked to buy that pair of shoes. And the joy that we had got out of it. And we didn't mind him having shoes with golden butterflies. We didn't care a bit. We loved it. And our happiness as we were all round seeing him with his shoes on, it was lovely.
If you have ever been driven along the roads in South Cambridgeshire, it is almost certain that at some time or other you'll have passed one of the great bulk flour lorries of Clark and Butcher, either thundering along the A11 or on some lesser road collecting wheat from a farm. Mr. Roger Clark of Clark and Butcher was kind enough to grant Fenprobe an interview. On the 2nd of June 1944, the mill had had a narrow escape from destruction when a wagon of an ammunition train passing through Soham was found to be on fire. Despite efforts of the railway staff, two of whom lost their lives, the contents of the wagon exploded, doing considerable damage to the town of Soham. The railway station was destroyed and the mill suffered a damage which caused it to stop running for 2 days.
Was a national subject in the papers and so on, and of course I was in Soham at the time, and it was quite phenomenal the things that happen when an explosion of such magnitude goes off. I believe the actual quantity was 44 bombs weighing 500 pounds each, all went off in one go. It seemed a pretty long time. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I thought it was never going to end.
It wasn't just one great big bang then, it was a succession.
No, they were going off one after the other, you see, these 44 bombs. They were just going on and on, one after the other, and it seemed to last for about half a minute. I looked out of the bedroom window and the gasworks was on fire, which was close to the railway. And we thought it was a bomb on the gasworks, really. We didn't realise what was going through. It was a whole trainload of bombs.
Because it did terrible damage to many hundreds of houses, didn't it?
Oh, lots of houses, yes. The roofs were off and gable ends were blown in. And the devastation was pretty considerable.
And the mill didn't escape either?
No, it did not escape. It got a certain amount of damage. The worst part of the damage, unfortunately, was the steam engine in the mill. It became... it had delicate moving parts in it, and those delicate parts were broken, and the mill stopped for about 3 days to have urgent repairs done, and then we were away again. But it was really a very big item in the affairs of not only the parish, but of the mill and everybody living here at that time. And then, of course, shortly following that, some years later, exactly one year,
wasn't it?
After D-Day, okay. 1 month after D-Day, we found ourselves once again in much trouble. The mill was a blazing inferno, and mills are always very dry inside, and mainly timber floors and timber wood inside to carry the different flowers going down them, and it was just an inferno, and it was so terribly hot that the shafting which carried the pulleys was 2 inches thick, and when it was cooled off the next day, these 2-inch rods went right through the mill. They were twisted like children's hoops.
Cambridge Fire Brigade arrived about 3/4 hour after the call. Their officers saw immediately that they would not be able to save much of the buildings, and they called in Medford for further heavy tackle. They did what they could.
And it was a total loss. The whole place went to the ground.
By 10 that morning, the fire was reasonably under control, and the Bedford firemen left, followed in due course by the Cambridge men. They left a trailer pump to put out the small fire so that it continued to break out all over the place.
Over a period of time, now that I look back to 1945, when the fire was raging, 3 o'clock in the morning, standing outside beside my father, watching it all go up in flames, the sight was depressing. Is very much an understatement. It was a lifetime's work of hard work going up in smoke, and my father was always a man of very even temperament, and he said, "Well, never mind." He said, "Good will come out of evil," and that was very true. Very true indeed, and it has been so. And so after the mill was rebuilt, we realised up to a point that the fire was the means of disposing of something which was worn out and obsolete, and without the fire we should probably never have cleared the down to the original site as the fire did it for us.
Beechhurst in Soham was once a private house, but is now the village college. Mrs. Forbes lived there when she was a girl, and relates something about the lifestyle of those days.
That's the Beechhurst.
Which is the Soham Grammar School.
It was, and now under the cover of the village college, all being part and parcel of one, adjoining one another. And this house on the left here is Addison House, and that's where Mr. and Mrs. Ford live. Mr. Ford was a teacher in the grammar school, and Mrs. Ford was the daughter of Charles Morby. Charles Morby was a very distinguished resident of Soham in his day. He started his career in the racing world as a jockey, and eventually he finished up as a manager. And he finished up as a manager for a famous spendthrift whose name was Abingdon Baird. His proper name was George Alexander Baird. But he disgraced himself rather badly, and he didn't want to be known. Nobody wanted to know him, in point of fact, as George Alexander Baird, and so he called himself Abingdon Baird. And that's how he'd lived. Well, now we're going to tap on Mrs. Ford's door. See, she's at home. She'll spare us 5 minutes. I think she'll probably have a few words to say about Sam.
Like Mr. Clark, were you born in Soham?
Yes.
And have lived here all your life?
Yes, in the moat. At the moat house?
I was born at the moat house.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was just before we left to go to Beechhurst.
Yes.
Why was it called the moat house?
Well, because there was a moat
around
it.
Yeah. Well, I knew that it was the obvious, but...
Yes, yes, there was. And now, that house was built by my father... it was bought from Baird, you know, the squire,
Abingdon
Baird, and all the land round it as well. Mm. And before he had it, of course, it was Squire Meredith. And it was through him that we didn't have the railway junction that they have now at Ely. Yeah. It was through him that it wasn't put in Soham.
Is that so?
Yes.
How interesting.
Because I got that from John Cow some time ago.
Oh, yes.
And,
What was life like living at the big house, Beechhurst?
Very comfortable.
Was
bags of room.
Yes. But we were a large family, you know. There were five of us.
Because now, of course, it is the school.
It is the school now.
Newer buildings have been added on.
Yes,
but it hasn't spoilt the look of the house, has it?
No, I think on the whole it hasn't. And they keep the grounds up well, which is rather a joy.
What's the biggest, you were mentioning at the beginning of this interview, the things that you had seen change and so on, but if you took stock of everything that has gone, what's the biggest change you think you've seen in Soham itself?
Well, it is the more people coming in, and I don't know, the people change.
They change, yeah.
Mm. Oh, they do, yes. Tremendously.
Do you think there is
so much coming and going?
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Do you think there's still a community spirit there in the town, or do you think that it has lost it, or it's in danger of losing that community spirit?
No, I think not really. No, I think there is a community spirit here, yes.
Well, of course, we're sitting in front of your house in Mr. Clark's car.
Yes.
And it's very busy at the moment, and of course you're going to hopefully have a little bit of peace when the...
We are indeed.
The bypass.
And it should come next spring.
Yes, within the year from now, yes.
Well, our house, you know, is very old, and when we lived at Beechhurst, my aunt was living here, and then... it did belong to my father, this house, and he modernised it, and we came here when all the family had gone, except myself.
Because your father was in racing, is that correct?
He was, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? He knew Fred Archer, I believe.
Oh, yes. Now, he was a great friend of my father's, but I know he was... used to come over to the moat house a lot because my mother has said so. And my mother liked him very much too.
Your father being in the racing industry, did he ever... why did he remain in Soham? I mean, did he... because his roots were here? I'm thinking in terms of Newmarket. Did he ever have longings to go there?
Oh, I don't think so. He went there when he was a boy, when he had run away from school, and went to Mr. Peter Price, who, trained him, really, ride.
He was a jockey?
Yes, but not for very long.
No, but what time would we be talking about now, roughly?
Well, about 1895, would it be, Roger?
That's about I think, yes.
About that.
I wasn't a witness to it.
Before Lester Pickett's time.
Yes, well before that. When they used to ride with long stirrups.
Did they?
Yes, in those days, just ordinary long stirrups, didn't they?
They straight
and
down.
No goggles or masks or anything, hats, nothing like that at all.
So they were a great deal tougher, you would say? You'd have
to be. Oh, yes, you would have to be, undoubtedly. But Father didn't ride for long, you know.
Did he not?
No. Really, many years.
When you see the big house, obviously you can see it from your back way.
Do
you ever have longings to, or you wish that things had changed and you were still living there?
No.
You like a small house?
I like a small house. Because wouldn't it be difficult to keep it up now?
Staff.
Think of the staff or lack of it.
How many staff did you have when you lived there?
Five in the house.
Five in the house?
House, yes. And then
and Crick was the gardener?
No, he was at the school.
Ah, yes.
No, we had... Do you remember old James Bailey?
Yes.
He was the vegetable
garden.
he was with the family for years.
Yes.
He left Mrs. Taylor at the place.
Yes, that's
when
right.
When he was... 10 years old, he worked in the garden until then, and then he went to them.